Welcome to The Trust Show. I'm Lottie Edwards, and today I'm joined by Mark Baguette, CEO and founder of Seraphim Space. The space tech fund has rocketed to the top of the entire investment trust universe over the past year, shares up more than 280%, and has just completed the largest fundraise the industry has seen since 2023. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So space investing is front page news today with this hype around a massive SpaceX IPO. But to begin with, could you take us back to 2016, I think it was, when you launched the fund?
Yeah.
What gave you the conviction back then?
Well, it was a confluence of a number of things. So it was actually in 2014 that myself and a couple of my partners that I'd worked with since 2006 decided to set up a thematically focused fund. We'd been a frontier investor for a decade earlier. And what we recognised about the space industry was that traditional space market had become very risk averse because it costs so much money to put satellites into space that they really sort of pushed back on new innovation because of the risks that it presented. And what we were recognising in 2014 was that there was a change in the market where entrepreneurs were looking to establish companies that were drawing on technologies from adjacent sectors, and then they were sort of bringing them into space. So this was all around things like 3D printing, a lot of telecommunication technology, all of the components from laptops and mobile phones. And these are areas that we'd previously been invested in, felt very comfortable around. So the changes that were happening in the sector were aligned with the sort of technology background and sort of success areas we'd had. In fact, AI, even back then, was one of the areas that we were being particularly successful in. And we had this sort of vision of all of these satellites producing all of this data that AI would make best sense of. So it was really what SpaceX was doing and how they were looking to bring down the cost through reusability and increase the access to the market. So all these things were happening at the same time. And we really just believed that this was going to become a very disruptive market. So in order to convince myself, as part of my own due diligence, I went and met 11 CEOs of some of the world's largest space companies and told them what I was planning to do with this new fund that was planning to invest into these disruptive new companies. And the majority of them agreed with the strategy. In fact, six of them then invested in the fund and cornerstoned the fund. So, and these were big companies like Airbus and SES and Telespazio and Teledyne, sorry, satellites. So these were the sort of leaders of the traditional space industry that were prepared to back this new fund. So it was that also gave me, you know, great conviction that we'd got the timing right.
The big catalyst in 2025, I think you'd agree, was a renaissance in European defence spending.
Correct.
With the trust top holding ICEYE signing this big deal with the German government.
Yes.
Do you expect this to continue to be a benefit to Seraphim Holdings longer term?
Yeah, well, the defence market is structurally changed. The Europe can no longer rely on the US, who have funded 60% of NATO for the last 50 years. And that means that they have to stand on their own two feet from a defence perspective and a space perspective. And when it comes down to space, the cupboard is largely bare in Europe. We've been just absolutely almost 100% reliant on the US for all of our space-based capability. So the Europeans collectively have agreed a $1 trillion budget in order to address defence, and space plays an important part of that. So we're really only just at the very beginning of this decade-long, at least, change in the defence market. So we believe that this is something that's going to be sustained. In fact, you know, the awards that have been made to some of our portfolio companies, you mentioned ICEYE there and the 1.7 billion euro contract they're awarded by Germany. But that was on the back of contracts throughout Europe with other MODs during the course of the last 6 months. None of these contracts took any longer than 6 months to agree, and all of them drove a coach and horses through the traditional procurement processes. But this isn't something that's just on ICEYE alone. Our top 10 companies in the last 12 months grew their revenues by on average 80%. And this is all defence. So I believe we're just on the sort of first rung of the ladder here. These defence organisations are going to readdress their procurement. It's going to refocus it on companies that have leading technologies. And I think that what we've just seen is really just the tip of the spear, the first dribbles of money coming out of these large budgets, and they're going to start to flow more broadly. So, yeah, I think we're only just getting going.
Mm-hmm. And despite European space companies becoming maybe more independent from the US, are there still areas that you won't invest in because of SpaceX's monopoly?
Yes, absolutely. When we started, and our thesis around space was, SpaceX is building this incredible launch business, so let's not invest in launch. So we don't invest in launch. In fact, we don't invest in space travel. We don't invest in anything to do with the moon or Mars. And a lot of people say to me, well, what's left? Well, what is left is all of the satellites that are creating data sets and creating new forms of communication that every sector on the planet is going to be able to use. So what we aim to do is to sort of avoid competing with SpaceX. But they only account for no more than 15% of the overall space market. And what we're sort of focused on doing, and where we have been looking to do this for the last decade, is to identify the emerging category leaders from the other 85% of the market. And that's what we continue to do.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the valuation of ICEYE as well? That was marked up more than 150% last year, which some would see as an attractive point to cut down, especially it's grown to around 40% position. Is that something you've been considering?
No, the exact opposite. Well, I'm a buyer rather than a seller. Why would I sell down on our best performing company when it's only just getting going? So no, we are completely unapologetic about the large percentage that ICEYE has in our portfolio. And if people have a sort of an issue with it, I point them towards 3i, and point that as a healthy example of a portfolio that's able to exist with one large, very good performing company. But the reality is that we just expect other portfolio companies to catch up with ICEYE, and that over a period of time, it will become more balanced just by us, you know, leaving it as it is. Mm-hmm. But our whole ethos is about backing our best performing companies. So selling down because it's done well is something that we just wouldn't consider. Mm-hmm.
So we've spoken about defence, but what are some of the other big themes?
Oh, right. Well, that's a whole podcast in its own right. So if you just think about the sort of the big space themes, so you've got Artemis, man and woman going back to the moon after a 50-year hiatus. Actually, here's an interesting story as a side. Sputnik, which was the first satellite to be launched in 1959, it was only 12 years later that man put his foot on the moon, which I think is an incredibly short period of time. And this time we're going to build permanent habitation. This will be at the poles of the moon where there's the ice caps, which is water for humans, and it's also fuel for rockets. This is an exciting area. It's certainly going to be a long-term growth area, not an area we're investing in as a fund right now, because commercially it's too far away for our appetite. But it's a big theme in space that's happening at the moment. Then the other driving theme of it is of course SpaceX and the huge IPO that's likely to happen this summer. That's likely to have a huge impact across the entire industry. But one of the things that it's really sort of drawn attention to is this concept of data centers in space. Mm-hmm. So Elon is looking to sort of leverage his position to provide an advantage to X.AI to provide effectively unlimited low-cost energy to give them an advantage in the AI race. But this has much broader implications for other AI players and also you know, the rest of the world. So many companies already exist today that are looking to establish this data center concept. It is real. We really believe in it. And really one of the sort of key drivers for making this happen actually relates back to SpaceX and their giant new rocket, which is called Starship. Mm-hmm. Incredible rocket. It's got its 10th test flight today. SpaceX are saying that they're going to do up to 300 of these a year. It's 10 times bigger than the Falcon 9, which was the workhorse for space for the last decade. And whilst the pricing yet hasn't been set in the market, there's a belief by most that it's going to be around $500 a kilo. So contrast that to the $5,000 a kilo, which is the market price at the moment. So 10 times more capacity at a tenth of the cost is really going to change the dynamics of the market and allow mega infrastructure. So this really is the sort of the dawn of the next era, really, for space, where business cases start to close on giant infrastructure like cell towers in space, like manufacturing in space, like data centers in space. And if you can build a large enough installation with the solar arrays that can capture enough energy to power a data center, you can also just think about bringing that energy back down to Earth to provide us with a new, reliable, clean energy that will help us really sort of move away from this over-reliance on oil.
Mm-hmm. Could you go into, you mentioned manufacturing as well. I think I've heard you've written somewhere about pharmaceutical manufacturing in space,
yes,
which I haven't heard that before.
So. This is a really exciting area that we've been investing into for a number of years. So in the zero gravity environment of space, every protein and every molecule behaves differently. So a scientific experiment that's done on Earth has different outcomes when it's done in the space environment. And this has been proved over the last 30 years on the International Space Station. And what we're now going through a period is scaling this up. So one of our investments is a space station company called Voyager. It's been on our portfolio for quite a number of years. In fact, it IPO'd last year. It's currently valued at a couple of billion dollars. And what they consider themselves to be is a science park in space. So through our venture funds, we also run private venture funds, mm-hmm, on space alongside our public growth fund. And we've been investing into the tenants of these space stations. These are the companies that are the pharmaceutical companies that are looking to develop new drugs. And so it's early in that market, too early for the trust to be investing in just yet. Mm-hmm. But we've already got positions in some companies that are early into this market. The other area where there is a development is around new materials. Again, because of all the properties of zero gravity and the impact that has on the different elements, there's a belief that that's going to lead to new materials that are being created. So we're excited about the prospect of synthetic rare earth materials developed in the space environment and then brought back down to Earth for us all to enjoy. And again, to move away this reliance that we have on countries like China that have a stranglehold over these rare earth materials.
Can we talk about the recent raise as well? The largest in the trust industry in 3 years, as I said, and with a significant retail uptake. You'll now be sitting on quite a big cash pile. What are the plans in terms of deployment of those proceeds?
So just one point to make there. It was also the largest retail fundraise for 5 years. So I'm really happy about how broadly the retail market has got behind this trust. So what are we going to do with the money? Well, just more of the same. You know, I've been really frustrated for the last couple of years. The space market's been developing exactly in line with our plans, but I've had no money to invest because, like most investment trusts, we've been sat on a large discount. That means that we've not been able to raise any money to deploy in the market. So just in the last year, we had to forego $100 million of investment into seven of our portfolio companies, and that hurt me to not be able to make those investments into those fantastic companies. So the first thing that we're going to do with the cash pile is to quickly and effectively invest into our portfolio companies. These are companies that we know, understand, and have high conviction on, and we can invest into those companies at quite a pace. And then because we've not been investing for the last couple of years, we've still been seeing an incredible amount of businesses to invest into. Just to sort of put that into context, we see something between 150 and 200 space investment opportunities a month. we've qualified that that's more than 75% of the entire global deal flow for space. And that puts us in a very privileged position. So we've seen some fantastic companies in the last 2 years that we haven't invested into, but we've looked at these companies carefully. We've stack ranked those companies that we haven't invested into. And now's the time that we're looking to go engage with those businesses and get involved either with their current or future funding rounds, or even potentially acquire secondary positions in those companies so that we can get exposure there very quickly. One of the things that I'm always looking to sort of correct is a lot of people think that with this new money, we're going to be investing into earlier stage companies, but that isn't the case. We're really just trying to invest in similar assets in terms of maturity and stage to those that we already have in the portfolio, because there's just so much opportunity in this market, but included in our own portfolio that we've been sort of restricted from supporting for the last couple of years.
And do you worry at all about reinvesting quickly at a time when prices might be inflated ahead of the SpaceX IPO?
So yes, that is one of the things that we really have to keep a careful eye on. We're a disciplined investor, and we appreciate that there is valuation appreciation at the moment. It's nothing like it is in the AI market. The values are still very much grounded in revenues and multiples and all of those good things. So the other thing is it's a real test of our sort of position in the market. We believe that these investors want us to participate in their rounds, and that that will lead to us having some control over pricing where we're leading the rounds. So whilst this is an area that we of course need to be focused on, it's not something that's keeping us awake at night.
And I'm sure this is one you get a lot, but did you ever consider investing in SpaceX?
No, we didn't, because our thesis was SpaceX was opening up the market for other space companies to exploit. We wanted to invest into those other companies that were taking advantage of that. And SpaceX is just such an exceptional company. It's just executed so well. It has access to almost free money. You know, that isn't the kind of competitor that I'd like to compete against. But in terms of investing, it was already too late stage at the point that we were starting our trust in 2021. Mm-hmm. We really go by letters of the alphabet, where we're investing in the B round, C round, D round, E round. They were already on letter G before we started our first fund. So they kind of ruled out from that perspective as well. And despite the fact that it would have been a fantastic investment, you know, we've been really carefully looking for the other SpaceXs. You know, I'm not saying that there are other companies that are going to scale to become $2 trillion. Mm-hmm. But what I am convinced is that there are a very broad range of leaders within different categories within the space market that are going to be valued in tens of billions or even hundreds of billions of dollars. And I'm also convinced that we're already invested in some of those companies.
Several trusts that do hold SpaceX have surpassed their private limit over the past year or so as their positions in that company have ballooned. And in doing so, I think I could say, have become maybe more direct competitors of yours. What do you tend to say to investors picking between, say, a global fund with select space exposure versus a dedicated space fund like your own?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say that having an exposure to SpaceX is fantastic. It's a brilliant company. You've done very well from it. But it isn't an exposure to the space market. It's an exposure to 15% of the space market. So if you believe in the space market opportunity, you need to look more broadly. And just in the same way that you wouldn't have a holding in NVIDIA and say, you know, there's my exposure to the AI market done, you wouldn't do in space either. So we encourage people to think about how else they're going to get an exposure to space. And I think that by doing that through a diversified global fund is a great way of getting that exposure. In terms of the question about sort of a generalist fund versus a specialist fund, you know, I think that I've already explained that we get 150 to 200 space deals a month. We've seen 10,000 space tech companies. So when it comes down to choosing the right space tech company to invest in, Would you prefer to do that with a specialist that's got you know, clear visibility of the global market and a deeper understanding of the sector and the risks, or a generalist who looks at all technology areas, typically within a regional view, and their deal flow, that is the only thing that they can actually invest from, is likely to be a sort of fraction in the size of the specialist. So, you know, I think that it depends what you're looking for. But for those of you that are sort of listening, that are interested in getting an exposure to space, would I do that through a generalist fund? Well, those that have had exposure to SpaceX have done very well, but I'm not sure what the upside is here for SpaceX. But I do believe that there's a massive upside across the diversified exposure to the rest of the space market.
What about the around 70% premium that the shares in the trust are on at the moment? Is that something that worries you at all?
No, not at all. Well, the premium, first of all, relates back to our latest reported numbers, which are the 31st of December. So we're sat here today on, what is it? It's the we're in the middle of May. So it's well out of date. We've had a range of announcements since then on individual companies, such as Zona Space Systems. We've had an IPO of one of our portfolio companies, Hawkeye 360. We've sold our second largest company, Allspace. So there's lots of stuff that's already gone on that we've already announced, which I think you know, really sort of helps people sort of justify the premium that we've got. The next results are out at the beginning of June, and I don't think we're going to disappoint.
On the Hawkeye IPO and the Allspace sale, are there any other value-affirming events on the horizon? Any more listings?
So we have two other portfolio companies that have indicated an intention to IPO, which includes ISAI. So neither of them are giving away very much at the moment, but you know, are carefully watching the market as it develops.
And lastly, I'd love to get your opinion on some of the more outrageous space claims. Humans on Mars in 4 years, Jesus on the moon. What are your big predictions for the next, I don't know, decade or so?
So all of that, I think, is exciting, and it's fun to read about. Not something for us to invest into, although, you know, I'm happy that other people are prepared to invest and support that activity, because at some point in the future, it'll come into focus for us. But not for a long time. For me, those type of activities are still very much really a sort of a government endeavour, and the private sort of commercial opportunities, I think, will come on the back of that. You know, what's the big things that I'm excited about in space? Well, there's a few themes to touch on. One of them is around nuclear. So we've got this amazing company in our portfolio called Zeno Power, and they've effectively taken the same sort of nuclear approach that was used in the Apollo missions, and they've brought it up to date. And what they effectively have developed is a nuclear power battery. It's the size of a microwave. It uses effectively a nuclear waste, and it provides a 10-year uninterrupted power supply. They've got contracts with NASA, with the for satellites. They've got contracts with the DoD for ground-based equipment. They've got contracts for submarines. So this is a really exciting sort of modular energy that is really, I think, going to be play a key role in the future of transportation and the future of property and development. So that's a really exciting area. And again, you know, we're just desperate as a world to move away from our over-reliance on oil. So things like this that really play into that, I'm excited by. We touched on earlier about, you know, the data centers in space, but really it's the extension of that I'm excited about, which is actually bringing power back to Earth from space. Again, this is now InSight. This is going to happen during the course of the next decade. There's no technology that really needs to develop here. You know, the University of California 2 years ago demonstrated that you can transport energy from space using microwaves. And the 11 companies that are set up to do this that we know of are all using that approach to do it. So this is really sort of a financing and a launch issue. And I think the environment that we're in right now, both of those are addressed. So now it's sort of turning the handle to make that a reality. So I'm excited about playing our role in that. And then again, the third thing that you sort of touched on earlier, which is around the implications of doing manufacturing in the space environment. You know, it's been really interesting that the huge amounts of experiments that have taken place on the International Space Station, you know, this sort of tiny caravan floating around our planet for the last 30 years. There was enough room to do the experiments, but there wasn't enough room to iterate on them and then to actually then move to the next phase of sort of manufacturing. So we're now at the stage where we're actually going to take all of those incredible outcomes from those experiments and actually do something with them. So this is going to catalyze, you know, a range of medical breakthroughs. Bearing in mind that this is all happening at the exact same time that we've got sort of unlimited access to AI. So you've got AI and you've got the sort of benefits of the zero gravity and that impact on every protein and molecule. So we're just expecting some incredible outcomes to come from that. And I don't think we're going to have to wait too long. One of our companies, just to reference, which is actually, again, not in the trust, it's in one of our earlier private space venture funds, but is a longevity business around stem cells in space, ultimately an injection in the back of the neck in order to reset your immune system. Wow. So these are the type of things that are coming that I'm really excited about. And as companies like that develop and they get mature enough, that's the point that we'll then start to take stakes through the investment trust and then enjoy the maturity and the growth as those types of businesses really scale.
Well, loads to think about there. We'll finish there, but thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
Thank you for having me on the show.